You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're starting today at Venice Beach, the latest flashpoint in LA's homelessness crisis. During the pandemic, hundreds of unhoused people set up camp all along the boardwalk, like Levi Walls. He landed here 5 months ago.
Well, I was on a road trip with my family, and we were just kind of, you know, getting out of Washington for a minute. We lost our home after we left because we couldn't get back, and me and my mom and my girlfriend. It's a long story. Yeah. Just everything kind of fell apart, you know.
Nearby residents and business owners are angry and concerned about public safety. Now pandemic restrictions are lifted, tourists are back, and so are the politicians. This week, L.A. City Council member Mike Bonin started a plan to clear the area of tents and move about 200 people into housing. L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva has also vowed to remove encampments from the boardwalk, but by July 4th. Yesterday, L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti even visited. So is the Venice Boardwalk headed for a showdown this weekend? KCRW reporter Anna Scott covers housing and homelessness, and she's here now to talk about it. Hey, Anna.
Hey, Steve.
What is the scene on the boardwalk now?
It's probably going to change in the next few days, but it's still a lot like how you just described it. Tourists, people walking, people biking, and a lot of unhoused people. Over the past couple of days, though, I've also seen teams of outreach workers from a nonprofit, St. Joseph Center, as well as from the LA Homeless Services Authority. At the same time, bars, restaurants are back in business. They're busy. One person I talked to is Mark Van Gessel. He owns a bar called Hinano Cafe near the south end of the boardwalk. And he says homelessness drives away customers.
So on a daily basis, we'll have homeless people walk into the bar trying to, number one, use our restrooms, cause problems in the bar until such point that the customers feel so uncomfortable, they decide to leave and they go somewhere else.
Now, complaints like this, Anna, are a big reason we're seeing politicians suddenly taking action. So what is Councilman Mike Bonin's plan?
To move people from the boardwalk to hotel rooms, mostly over the next month and a half, and then from there to permanent housing. He says he has apartments or rental vouchers for all of the approximately 200 people living by the boardwalk.
What was Mayor Garcetti doing there?
He met with the head of the nonprofit that is leading the outreach to house people, St. Joseph Center. He took a drive with some LAPD officers who briefed him on public safety issues. He walked the boardwalk, got yelled at by a couple of passersby. I was there as well. One of the questions I asked him was, where have you been? This situation has been boiling for a long time. And he really has let Mike Bonin, publicly at least, take the lead on it for the city and hasn't been very visible.
Well, look, I think throughout the years I've been incredibly visible on this, but I take that criticism well. People got to know what I'm doing, and they got to see the mayor out here doing that work. But I'm not interested in yelling about this and pointing fingers. That seems to be the main play. We got to solve it. So I agree. That's why I'm here. That's why you're here.
In other words, Steve, Garcetti was there to personally put his face on this. So when we talk about the boardwalk again in 6 weeks or 6 months, we can hold Garcetti personally accountable for the outcomes.
And so far, what are the outcomes? I mean, has anyone moved indoors?
Garcetti said that 54 people have been moved indoors from the boardwalk in the last couple of weeks. After he left the boardwalk yesterday, I learned that the city is apparently planning to start sanitation cleanups along the boardwalk this Friday. They're going to do it in sections, and people will have to move tents and belongings.
All right, wait a second, because Sheriff Alex Villanueva said he's going to clear the boardwalk by the 4th of July, which is this Sunday. Are they working together? Are these all sort of disparate actions? What's going on here?
They are disparate actions. Nobody at the city seems to know what Villanueva is planning. I didn't see any sheriff's deputies on the boardwalk Monday and Tuesday of this week. I did see their homeless outreach team earlier this month, and they were referring people to St. Joseph Center and the LA Homeless Services Authority. One of their lieutenants told me then that they weren't planning any enforcement actions, but a lot of homeless advocates don't believe them. One person I spoke to is Carlos Marroquin. He's a community organizer and a homeless advocate.
This is all about intimidation. That's what it is. You see them, you know, with their guns on their sides and so on. It's intimidation. And it's a concern because the unhoused people have been hurting for a long, long time.
Anna Scott, I want to go back to the people at the center of this. You know, when we talk about the homeless issue, and it's always, you know, them or they, or, you know, these are human beings, and they're in desperate times. It's sure it's frustrating to watch and all of that. But I wonder about the unhoused people who are actually living on the boardwalk. What do they want? What is their story?
It's impossible to answer that in a general way. Like most large encampments or most communities of any kind, people's individual stories and their needs vary endlessly. I've talked in the last couple of weeks to people who have been unhoused in Venice for decades. I've talked to people who just arrived recently, like Levi Walls, who you heard earlier. What he wants is a plane ticket back to Washington. He's from a tiny mountain town called Index. He's lost his ID. He said he would accept a hotel room in the meantime, but he's a little wary about strict rules and curfews and things like that.
Like I said, it's condescending, kind of, you know. I used to build houses and stuff, you know. I used to have a life.
Other people I spoke to might need what's known as permanent supportive housing, which is subsidized apartments for people with physical disabilities or mental illness. Others maybe just need temporary help with rent to get back on their feet. It's a really complicated situation, and extra complicated because housing resources in LA are so scarce, the demand is probably going to exceed the supply. One person I met just this week is Jeremy Washington. He's been homeless in South LA, but he showed up in Venice on Monday because he heard that the city would be offering housing to people there.
You know, I, you know, got to take advantage of it if you need the help. I'm a grown man. I'm 30. I'm 31. I'm a grown man. I look for work every day. Whether I'm homeless or not, I look for work. I got to look for work because a man don't work, he don't eat, you know. So look for work. I love helping people. I have 14 years of restaurant experience, you know. So my grind don't stop just because I'm homeless.
So, Anna, I mean, what can we expect in the next few days?
Well, Friday, the city starts its sanitation cleanups. It's likely that unhoused advocates will show up. We'll see what that brings. Then we will also see if the sheriff's department moves in to meet that July 4th deadline or if they back off that. Whatever happens, I'll be following the story.
And we will follow along right with you. KCRW's Anna Scott, who covers housing and homelessness for us. Anna, thanks for keeping up with this story.
Thank you, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, onward now to the story of three B-list actresses lucky enough to choose where they live.
We're under a lot of pressure, okay? You try studying day and night to get into college. We've been working hard. We deserved a night.
All right, take it easy.
Shouldn't you be in college or something? I thought gay people were all successful overachievers.
See, with me, it will be summer all year long. Vote for summer.
That's Haley Duff from Napoleon Dynamite. Remember that movie? Becca Tobin from Glee and Jamie Lynn Sigler from The Sopranos. During the pandemic last year, this trio, who were friends, decided to pack up and leave Los Angeles for good. They moved their families to Austin, Texas, joining an eastward migration that has seen home values in the Texas capital balloon to record levels. At least that's how New York Times freelance reporter Mariella Rudy puts it. She spent time with Sigler, Duff, and Tobin to figure out why Hollywood stars are ditching their homes near the Hollywood sign. Hi, Mariella.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell us a bit about these three friends, because they all had these pretty well-known roles in the late 1990s, early 2000s. Are they still working in Hollywood? Are they working actors?
Yeah, they are, and they actually all had gigs outside of L.A., during the pandemic. So they were shooting on location, you know, in places like Vancouver and Indianapolis. And so they were still able to work during, you know, what was 2020 when a lot of people weren't.
Yeah, you can be an actor anywhere, right, these days, because they're shooting, studios are shooting movies in many different places, not just L.A., it's not just California anymore, as we know, to California's detriment, right? That other states are certainly getting in on the action.
Yeah, actors are finding it, more common, even people who work on the set and writers, directors, that you're not tied to the coasts. You can live elsewhere and you might find a better quality of life, especially if you're not, in the 1% of Hollywood, and you can travel and you can do Zoom acting. You can, have your auditions on self-tape, and you can even have your acting classes online. So it's all going remote.
You spoke with these three actors. What went into their decision to move to Austin in the first place? And why Austin? Why not Atlanta or somewhere else?
Right. So the sense that I got was that they were kind of over the quote-unquote scene of Los Angeles. They were spending more time outdoors, obviously, like we all were. And they have families. They have kids. And so they've kind of found themselves gravitating towards the life's bigger questions, and kind of saw this opportunity flash before their eyes, and the window was getting closer and closer to the point where they thought, should we kind of just take the plunge together? And so Haley Duff was the native Texan of the group, and the other two weren't really familiar with Austin or even Texas in general. And so they kind of created a pact. They had formed this pod together and got through the worst of the pandemic together. And so they thought, why don't we move together? And so they did. And they all ended up in the same neighborhood, 20 minutes outside of downtown Austin, and have kind of created their own little life separate from Hollywood.
I love this line in your article from Becca Tobin, who lived in LA for 12 years. She said, quote, "As easy as it was to come, it was as easy for me to say goodbye." That's cold.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, whatever. She probably, maybe it was just a move that she, was good for her, and she was like, I'm ready to go, and she didn't fall in love with LA like a lot of people do. But
yeah, the way she explained it to me was that she didn't have this great love affair. A lot of people come here and they hold on to the dream well beyond it's it's feasible, so I don't know. I kind of respected her for saying that.
I want to talk about the numbers for a moment, because through your reporting you talk about population and how it's gone down in California, how it's grown in places like Texas. Go over some of those numbers. Actually, California was more flat than down, but still not on the increase that we've seen over the past decades, right?
Yeah. Actually, it's not just people in Hollywood who are moving out of Los Angeles and California in general. For the first time in more than a century, California actually lost people last year. And that's in contrast to Texas and even Austin's population increases. And this accounts for, deaths and immigration. But in 2018 and 2019, 90,000 Californians moved to Texas. And that's the most amount of people moving to any state is going from California to Texas. They're going to Texas the most.
What's fascinating, Mariela, is it's a very different environment in those places. Like when we talk about, and I'm not talking about politically, people have political persuasions, all over the map. But when it comes to like weather, for example, like in California, you have a, I was going to say a Mediterranean climate, semi-arid, right? You've got desert, then you've got the coast. Doesn't rain a whole lot. It's pretty dry, maybe not a whole lot of mosquitoes. That is not the case in Central Texas.
No, you get extremes of the seasons there, as we saw with that devastating storm and then with these crazy summer heats that they're having, but that's everywhere also. I think the big draw is that you get these seasons in Texas and Central Texas especially, and you're still central. So, you have to have good air conditioning and a good power grid, and I think they're trying to figure that out right now.
What about the people in Austin who have been there? Has there been any pushback from locals who maybe aren't aren't so keen on so many Angelenos coming to their place.
You know, there are, of course, but in my reporting, I've mostly found that people are more welcoming than not. It's still a southern town, and it's still welcoming, and it still wants that money. It is the fastest growing metro in the U.S., and we don't even have to go into all the business that's coming into it right now. Of course, there's affordable housing implications in that. Homelessness is, especially in downtown Austin, that they're keeping an eye on, but it's nowhere near Los Angeles or California standards.
Mariella Rudy, who's a freelance reporter, her piece for the New York Times is called Three Hollywood Stars Recast Their Lives Deep in the Heart of Texas. Mariella, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, it's not just three actresses. Around 10% of Angelenos plan to leave L.A. County in the next year. That's according to a survey conducted by USC just a few months ago. And Austin, Texas is one of the big destinations. That city is about to cross 1 million residents, bypassing San Jose as the 10th biggest city in the country in terms of population. David Loeffler is a former senior editor over at the Austin Monthly. Hey, David.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me here.
You bet. Joining us also, a couple of other folks from other cities as well. Catherine Davis-Young is senior field correspondent for the NPR station in Phoenix, KJZZ. Hey, Catherine.
Hi there.
And Ricky Bevington is afternoon host at Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta, Georgia, or Hotlanta, as we call it. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, Steve. Good to be here.
David, I'm going to start with you since we're sort of on this Austin kick at the moment. The population is growing fast. Its housing prices are growing fast, too. We talked a little bit about that in the previous segment. Incomes are growing. What is the feeling in Austin and among, you know, longtime residents there about what's happening?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I'm actually from Austin, so I've definitely been able to witness this over a larger span. And the idea of the Californication of Austin and Texas writ large is not a new thing, but over the past year and a half especially, it's really come on to a whole different level. And we're seeing that from a housing prices perspective, but I think there's also just a general unrest about the intangible aspect of this, which is the cultural as well.
But you also wrote an article last year titled Why California Might Not Be to Blame for Austin's Changes. So you just said Californication, but you say that maybe California is not to blame for what's going on over there. What's going on there, David?
Yeah, and for context, that article was written, it came out the last summer, and so some of the figures have changed as the pandemic has expedited the movement here. But you're right. I mean, I think a lot of that unrest about the Californication of Austin, Texas, for years, I think was a little bit misplaced, right? When Governor Greg Abbott took office in 2015, one of the first things he said is that action needs to be taken before the quote, Texas miracle becomes the California nightmare. So a lot of this has been ginned up in narrative, but you know, based on 2019 data, which is what my article is based on, you know, more than half of the people moving to Austin were just from other parts of Texas, especially Dallas and Houston. And so I think what we're seeing now is that a lot of those fears and then that narrative that was being driven about the Californication of Austin have been kind of been manifested a little bit more over the past year as the population has grown. And it's just really made the city ripe, I think, for a lot of those fears to be taking hold.
Ricky Bevington, what kinds of changes are you seeing in Atlanta? Is there a noticeable California presence, even Angeleno presence in your city?
I'll start with a disclaimer, Steve. This is not a debate about whether Atlanta or other cities are better or worse than Los Angeles. Some of my favorite people in the world live in LA, but Atlanta and Georgia more broadly has an up to 30% tax credit for productions. That includes movies, music videos, video games, and of course, television shows. And so a lot of Angelenos, particularly in the film industry, make their way to Georgia. They do so much work here that many people have actually ended up simply moving They like the lower cost of living. They like that it's a slightly easier pace of life. We have excellent food. We have slightly less traffic. We have an incredible airport where you can get anywhere, and many sports attractions, cultural universities. So Atlanta has a lot to offer.
How do you think people in Atlanta, though, are reacting to that? Because that's the question, and what I'm posing to all of you. What are people in Atlanta saying specifically about people from L.A. and even in the film industry coming there?
Sure. Well, we don't use terms like Californication. We are Southerners. We don't say bad things about people, at least to their face. So
no, you
we're
say
delighted.
Bless your heart is what you say.
Right, exactly. That's not
what
bad.
You say.
You know, Atlantans, I think that Atlanta is such an international city that it's hard to meet a native Atlantan. And so we're used to people from elsewhere in the country and elsewhere in the world. It really hasn't fazed us. So people don't really have any grumblings about LA people here. I think we're happy to just have new faces to talk to, new perspectives in our friend circle, so to speak. And it's a little bit glamorous to have somebody who works in Hollywood in your new friend group here in Atlanta. The only thing I might say is that housing prices in Atlanta are not low, but of course, when California people roll in, they have sticker shock, and that's in the other direction. They think it's lower housing prices. So you may have people say, well, we can't get into the nicest rental buildings because we've got a bunch of film industry people who are happy to pay this for square footage here. But that's really anecdotal. And I would say, by and large, Atlantans are happy to have more people and more interesting people in our city.
500,000, you know, can buy you a nice, you know, 2,000-3,000 square foot home in Atlanta, in a decent neighborhood. Whereas 500,000 in LA may get you a burned out fixer upper in North Hollywood. Right? That's about where we are.
And it isn't just about housing prices. It's just an easier pace of life to live in Atlanta than a lot of other major cities. And in terms of size of city, Atlanta is the nation's eighth largest media market. Just to give you a sense, we're not a small town anymore.
Yeah. Phoenix is a big media market as well. And I'll turn to you, Catherine, because you have been talking in Phoenix about sort of an influx of people from California as well. Tell us about how it's affecting what's going on in the state next door.
Well, I should first say, for full disclosure, that I lived in LA for about a decade, and I've only lived in Phoenix now about 5 years. So I am one of the offending carpetbaggers that we're here to talk about. And Maricopa County is where Phoenix is. It's the fastest growing county in the nation and has been now for several years. At one point, we were gaining something like 200 people a day in the Phoenix area. A lot of those people certainly are coming from California, and it makes sense. It's pretty much, you know, a 5-6 hour drive if you want to go visit your family in California, but it's still warm weather and it's a lot cheaper. But what's happening is a really, really uneven supply and demand equation. You just can't have that much growth and not have prices rise. And the building industry, construction industry, really stalled out in Phoenix in the 2008 housing crisis. So we just never caught up to the speed of growth. We had a housing crisis a few years ago, and it's only gotten worse. It's only going to get worse. So rent prices here are among the fastest rising in the country. Between 2015 and 2020, unsheltered homeless population in the Phoenix area nearly tripled. We've got a really tight housing market. So Arizona has always had this reputation for being a more affordable alternative to California. That's becoming less and less true. Of course, if you're coming from California, like Ricky said, in Georgia, you know, $1,500 for rent might seem like a bargain, but we don't have those kinds of rent protections here that are keeping prices in place for the Arizona residents that were here before. So if your rent goes from $1,100 to $1,500 in the space of a few years, that's a huge problem. And when I talk to sources here, I hear a lot of people say things like, you know, Arizona's housing crisis isn't as bad as California, but we're getting there. So I think there is this fear that California has been in this boat for a long time, and now, right next door in Arizona, we're starting to see that spill over.
I want to thank all three of you for joining us today. Catherine Davis-Young, KJZZ in Phoenix. Ricky Bevington with Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. David Loeffler, journalist from Austin, Texas. Thanks to you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. And no Angelinos were harmed during the making of this interview.
Thanks so much, Steve. Really appreciate it.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, fireworks are supposed to be a no-no in much of L.A. County, but you're probably hearing them anyway. As a matter of fact, I know you're hearing them. And you can bet that that'll continue over the weekend and beyond. We'll talk about it. By the way, here at KCRW, we're gearing up for a great summer with events. Yes, in-person events, free concerts. You're on the list. We're making it happen with a Return of Summer Challenge Grant, and we need your support today. When you donate to have your gift matched up to $10,000, well, it's a big deal for us. Thanks to entertainment law firm McEwen, Frankel, and Whitehead. When you give, you'll also be entered into our Golden Ticket Sweepstakes. So, yeah, we missed you last summer. If you missed us, give now. KCRW.com/give. And thank you for your support. Subscribe to the podcast, too, while you're there online. Catherine Barnes, Jackie Sedley, Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Todd, Jody Adler, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. Thank you for your ears. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.